Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.
It feels like we're all being told to go on this diet, take that supplement. Ozempic will give you depression, but you know what'll cure that? Weed. Or you could try to balance your hormones. At Science Versus, we're like,
what the f*** is going on?
Forget the crap online and listen to Science Versus. Just the facts. Oh, and a bunch of stupid jokes.
What is a ghost's favorite fruit? Booberries.
That's Science VS. New season out on Spotify soon.
Mary Tucker Borrowdale was not a happy woman. She was old and she was alone. Her husband of 22 years had up and died on her. Yes, he'd left her his fortune, but what was money without companionship? Mary tried to be social, attending balls and theater, but they just made her feel more lonely most of the time, especially the dances. Who wanted to partner with a 64-year-old widow when there were so many other beautiful young girls to choose from? It made Mary feel like a fool. But today, Mary might have discovered a solution in the West End of London. She quickly stepped out of her carriage and into the shop at number 47A New Bond Street, taking care that no one in the street saw her face. The shop was dimly lit, silk scarves wrapped over the lamps, giving them a mystical glow. The air was perfumed with sandalwood and spices. Behind the counter stood an imposing woman, dressed all in black, a crystal talisman around her neck. Mary recognized immediately that this heralded woman was Madame Rachel. And she knew how to transform women, how to make them beautiful forever. Mary Tucker Borrowdale was about to embark on a 2-year path that would leave her blackmailed, bankrupt, and broken. And it would all be at the hands of the acclaimed purveyor of cosmetics to Her Majesty the Queen herself, Madame Rachel. Welcome to Con Artists, a Parcast original. I'm your host, Alastair Murden. Every week, we peel back the layers of history's greatest deceptions and tell the stories of the hustlers, swindlers, and fraudsters that orchestrated them. I'll dive into their psychology, break down their tricks, and explain why anyone might fall for a con. You can find episodes of Con Artists and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Con Artists for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Con Artists in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. And if you enjoy today's episode, the best way to help is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help us. This week, we'll track the life and lies of the notorious Madame Rachel, also known as Sarah Rachel Russell. We'll look at how a woman from humble beginnings conned her way into the world of high society by selling exorbitantly priced bogus cosmetics to the very women she aimed to befriend. Next week, we'll follow Madame Rachel as she moves on from just selling fake products to blackmail, and how the victim of her biggest con of all would ultimately be the one to take Madame Rachel down for good. In 1860s Victorian London, the pursuit of beauty was as potent as it is today. However, cosmetics were deemed improper and unseemly, only to be used by actresses and sex workers. Still, the desire for eternal youth remained. To avoid any scandal, women sought out beauty treatments in secret, which made cosmetics the perfect hunting ground for a con artist like Madame Rachel. Women wouldn't dare to admit they'd paid for her services, whether the products worked or not. In the 1860s and 70s, Madame Rachel discreetly operated a shop in the West End of London, offering high society women the finest beauty treatments money could buy. She won over client after client by rattling off rare and exotic ingredients that she claimed to have imported from Arabia. She sold things like magnetic rock dew water and Circassian golden hair wash. Of course, such exclusive products came at a cost. A high cost. But Madame Rachel's exotic cosmetics were, for the most part, bunk. Some of the more innocuous ingredients included sand and bran. But she also regularly employed cyanide and even arsenic. Still, with her infectious and mysterious personality, Rachel was able to con rich, gullible women into paying obscene amounts of money for her poisonous creations. In Victorian England, gender roles were completely divided. As Susan Kingsley Kent described in her book Victorian Era, Gender and Empire, barred by law and custom from entering trades and professions by which they could support themselves and restricted in the possession of property, women had only one means of livelihood, that of marriage. Women were so exclusively identified by their sexual functions that 19th century society came to regard them as the sex. Therefore, if marriage and femininity was the only way for women to get ahead in the world, it behooved them to be as beautiful as possible. In their desperation for eternal youth and attractiveness, Madame Rachel provided just the cure. Or so she promised. Her knack for promotion, her trusting demeanor, and her lavish shop all made Rachel the face of the very thing she was exploiting in her clients: beauty. Long before she was known as Madame Rachel, she was Sarah Rachel Russell. Rachel was born in 1814 and grew up on London's East End. Her father was described as a man much respected by his neighbours, being of a very congenial turn of mind and a great humorist. While we don't have many details on Rachel's family, it's likely that they were Jewish. There was an increase in Jewish immigrants in London's East End at the turn of the 19th century, and her family was likely among them. However, this might have been an anti-Semitic characterization added on later, once her criminal activity was revealed. It's also likely that Rachel grew up extremely poor and without a formal education. Illiterate and in need of money to help support her family, Rachel went through a number of odd jobs in her preteens through her early 20s. She started out selling rabbit skins and glass bottles in street markets, then moved on to selling second-hand clothes. After that, she set up a fried fish and potato shop in Clare Market. She later had a brief stint as a fortune teller, telling fortunes in exchange for pennies. She's also rumored to have been involved in the sex work industry, though her exact role is unclear. In some accounts, she was a sex worker herself, eventually leading to a brief prison sentence. But other accounts allege that Rachel was more akin to a pimp. In these stories, Rachel scouted out young theater actresses and brought them to work at a nearby brothel. For each girl, she received a finder's fee. Rachel tried anything she could do to make some money, attempting to lift herself and her family out of a life of poverty. But nothing proved all that profitable. In addition to her revolving door of employment, Rachel also went through a series of husbands in quick succession. While she was still a teenager, Rachel married a chemist's assistant in Manchester, England, but he died shortly after. In 1844, Rachel married Jacob Moses, a sailor. But this union also dissolved. Some reports state that Moses was lost at sea in 1859 while traveling home from Australia. Others claim that he deserted her. After Moses, she moved in with a gentleman named Philip Levinson. Soon after they started living together, Rachel took his last name, but the two never legally married. This might have been an attempt to avoid judgments from their neighbors as they cohabitated. Because not only did Rachel adopt Levinson's last name, but so did her seven children. While the identities of the fathers of each of these children have never been made clear, by the late 1850s, in addition to losing two husbands, Rachel had also given birth to seven children. Six girls and a boy. Even with Levinson's help, she needed a more reliable income, and fast. In 1860, an illness gave her the idea for a new business venture. Allegedly, Rachel came down with a terrible fever that lasted several weeks. To treat it, or perhaps just to make her more comfortable, the doctor shaved her head. This would have been somewhat demoralizing and traumatizing for Rachel, as long hair was a staple of Victorian beauty. While the fashion of the time had women style their hair up, twisting, braiding, and pinning it on top of their head, most women had long, thick hair that reached down their backs, in some cases even reaching the floor. Therefore, once she was cured from whatever caused the fever, Rachel likely would have felt self-conscious about her cropped appearance. However, again, the doctor came to her aid. As described in The Extraordinary Life and Trial of Madame Rachel, quote, "The medical man, to pacify her under this severe loss, told her not to mind it, that he would give her something that should make her hair grow rapidly and be more beautiful than ever. When she recovered from the fever, strange to say, nature was so bountiful that her hair grew most wonderfully fast, at which she was so delighted that she asked the doctor for the recipe, which he gave her. And now she, like a worldly woman, began to think of turning it to account." Her shaved head made Rachel feel ugly and embarrassed. Now, she was the most beautiful she'd ever been in her life. She realized that she had to share this wonder cure with the world. Using the doctor's formula and some of the knowledge she'd learned from her first husband, the chemist's assistant, Rachel replicated the hair salve and bottled it for sale. Rachel set up a booth in an outdoor market in London's Covent Garden. She told everyone who stopped by about her triumph over her shame, showing off her thick, gleaming locks. She claimed that after just a few weeks, not only had her hair returned, but it grew in thicker, glossier, and curlier than it was before. She let her dark, shiny waves of hair flow loosely down her back for all to see. Rachel styled herself as a cosmetic evangelist, compelled to share the good news of her miracle with the women of London. She was beautiful, and they could be too. Of course, the story was a complete fabrication. Rachel's head was never shaved. Her hair wasn't magic. The salve didn't work. But it didn't matter. Rachel made a killing, and it opened the door to an entirely new business venture. Less than a year later, the illustrious Madame Rachel, purveyor of cosmetics to Her Majesty the Queen, was born. Coming up, Madame Rachel opens her first shop and attracts high society clients with her knockoff cosmetics.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Now, back to the story. In 1861, 47-year-old Sarah Rachel Russell Levinson opened a cosmetic shop, offering exotic products to the women of London. With this new business venture came a new name. She started calling herself Madame Rachel. This wasn't just a reshuffling of her given names, it was another layer of the con. Elizabeth Felix was a popular French actress at the time, better known by her stage name, Mademoiselle Rachel. She was a staple figure in French high society and widely regarded as the best actress of her time. She was so notorious that French cosmetic companies named a shade of foundation powder after her. An advertisement in a French beauty magazine described powder in three variations: blanche, for fair skins, naturelle, for darker complexions, and Rachel, for use by artificial light, like under the gas lights in a theater. In addition to aligning herself with someone who was already synonymous with makeup and beauty, Rachel exaggerated her backstory. As Madame Rachel, she now claimed she was a member of high society and friends with those at the upper echelon of the elite. She boasted about her friendships with wealthy aristocrats. The circle Madame Rachel ran in was far from the humble life Sarah Rachel Levinson was actually leading. This gave her legitimacy in the eyes of her clientele. She was already rubbing shoulders with the elite. That meant she was already sharing her beauty secrets with them. If her more middle-class customers wanted to look like their high-class counterparts, Madame Rachel was the woman who could give it to them. Remember, Rachel never had any formal education. She was completely illiterate. When she needed to write a letter or advertisement, she was forced to dictate the words to one of her children. But while we wouldn't call Rachel book smart, she was certainly street smart. Growing up hustling in the West End gave her a formidable education. She had a knack for reading people, drawing them in with her charm and warm personality, and letting them in on the most powerful secret there is: how to achieve beauty. By being vulnerable and open about her own struggles with beauty, Rachel was able to quickly connect with women on the street, zeroing in on their personal insecurities. Rachel would then offer them the solution to all of their problems in the form of a lotion, cream, or ointment. Once Rachel realized how immense the desire for beauty was, the world opened up to her. She realized she could sell pretty much anything, so long as the story behind it was compelling enough. She saw this over and over again in the first year of selling the hair salve as she perfected her story. Rachel's fever transformed into an illness that brought her and her entire family to the brink of death. Eventually, she claimed to invent the ointment herself, not giving the doctor any credit whatsoever. And the more outrageous the story became, the more of an absolute miracle her luscious, flowing locks appeared to be. She was such a skilled salesperson, people kept buying. Sensing the potential to appeal to a broader audience, Rachel decided to set her sights beyond Covent Garden. If she really wanted to profit off of beauty, there was only one place in London to be in: Mayfair. In 1862, 48-year-old Madame Rachel opened up her own salon on London's Bond Street, in the heart of Mayfair. It was the shopping district for royalty and the aristocracy, deepening her mythos as the beautician to the elite. Her store on Bond Street was described as, quote, "a little cupboard of a room, scented with a compound of every imaginable perfume. Bottles of every sort of essence, pomade, and cosmetic were ranged on shelves or within glass doors, interspersed with masks, boxes for patches, bunches of false hair, powder puffs, curling irons, and rare feathers." Emblazoned atop the door of her salon was a promise: beautiful forever. However, during her reign, Queen Victoria pronounced cosmetics to be vulgar and unladylike, fit only for the theatre or the brothel. This didn't so much dampen women's desire to use makeup, but it encouraged them to do it in secret. Makeup in the Victorian era was pretty crude. There were really only three products: rouge or blush, kohl or eyeliner, and foundation powder. Except for the most high quality and expensive brands, makeup had a tendency to look gaudy and fake. British women were better served pinching their cheeks or biting their lips to add a touch of color to their faces if they also wanted to adhere to the Victorian directive of subtlety. This covert approach to cosmetics led to the advent of a different kind of product. Instead of selling makeup to cover up ugliness, Madame Rachel offered revolutionary treatments guaranteed to enhance a woman's natural beauty and ensure that it lasted forever. Not only did Madame Rachel offer a unique service, but she opened her shop at a time when advertising was in its infancy. With the emergence of a new middle class, capitalism found a new audience to cater to, insisting that products that were once thought to be luxury items were now actually staple commodities. As Tammy Whitlock explained in her article on Madame Rachel in the Victorian Review, quote, "The decade of the 1860s was a high point in the material and commercial culture of this consumption-oriented century. Despite rhetoric about the safety of the domestic sphere, middle-class women found retail culture catering to their needs and desires. Advertisements, women's magazines, and a proliferation of shops brought the message to women and men that fashion was attainable and affordable to those who had not been able to worship at its altar before." Madame Rachel was one of the first aestheticians to wage a steady ad campaign, filling London newspapers with bulletins about her shop, until Madame Rachel and beauty were synonymous. One advertisement that ran in London's Morning Post read, quote, "Beautiful women, Madame Rachel begs to inform her lady patronesses, the nobility, the aristocracy, that she has opened her annual subscription list for the supply of her costly Arabian preparations for the restoration and preservation of female loveliness." She even advertised in the form of cartoons, depicting the miraculous change that women could experience from her services. Seeing that Rachel was illiterate herself, she likely realized that a picture could still communicate plenty. It didn't take long for the wealthy women she called upon to begin showing up in hordes. These high society women were all desperate for beauty products that worked. And now they finally had an answer to their problems in Madame Rachel. Because none of these women would ever publicly admit to using cosmetics, their trips to Bond Street were conducted in absolute secrecy. Women arrived in covered carriages, the windows shaded by screens. They wore heavy cloaks and scarves, disguising themselves so as not to be recognized. Once inside Madame Rachel's shop, they were greeted by overwhelming beauty. Madame Rachel's shop on Bond Street was as lush, lavish, and luxurious as the women it catered to. The smell of incense flowed through the air. Middle Eastern decorations adorned the walls, evoking the faraway lands where Madame Rachel's ingredients had traveled from. The proprietor herself greeted each customer in long dark robes and jaw-dropping jewelry. She wore a large crystal talisman, a sign of the secret wisdom she inherently possessed. She offered over 60 different treatments and products, grouped into 7 categories. Washes for the complexion, powders for the complexion, dentifrices and mouthwashes, hair preparation, creams for the face, Royal Arabian soap, and perfumes. They ranged in price from 5 shillings to several hundred guineas. For reference, there are 20 shillings in a pound, and a guinea referred to 1 pound and 1 shilling. 1 pound in 1864 had the buying power of approximately £126, or $155 today. To make her products seem worthy of their high price tag, they all had extravagant names, most linked in some way to the region they were allegedly from. There was the Armenian Beauty Wash, the Royal Arabian Face Cream, the Honey of Mount Hymettus Soap. One of her most popular products was Magnetic Rock Dew of the Sahara, said to have been brought straight from the African desert. This product would not only bring color back to hair that had turned gray, but it would also promote a more youthful appearance to those who were aging. With hair being both a symbol of beauty and of status, Madame Rachel offered a miracle cure that could improve the appearance of both. The more expensive the product, the more outlandish the name. For example, one of her perfumes, the Royal Arabian Toilet of Beauty, as arranged by Madame Rachel for the Sultana of Turkey, the facsimile of which is used by the Royal European Brides, the cost? 100 to 1,000 guineas. The prices for these products were steep. But many people in the early 1860s in Mayfair believed that the high prices were reflective of the rare ingredients that made up the cosmetics. Rachel was able to help keep her con hidden by charging more, making people believe the products were legitimate. Perhaps Madame Rachel's most famous treatment was a high-priced service she called enameling. In the Victorian era, women tried to mimic a pale, porcelain-white complexion. This standard of beauty was influenced by one of the most common illnesses of the age, consumption or tuberculosis. As Emily Mullen described in her article on tuberculosis and Victorian fashion, the Victorians romanticized the disease and the effects it caused in the gradual build to death. For decades, many beauty standards emulated or highlighted these effects. Among the upper class, one of the ways people judged a woman's predisposition to tuberculosis was by her attractiveness. As women's bodies were slowly ravaged by the disease, it caused a number of symptoms that were seen as the standard of beauty, such as thinness and pale skin. It also gave some women naturally rosy cheeks, red lips, and sparkling eyes. But these were actually symptoms of a chronic, low-grade fever caused by illness. Madame Rachel capitalized on the style of consumptive chic with enameling, providing women with the pale, porcelain look they desired. The process was as follows. First, Rachel used different caustic lotions to remove any vellus hairs from the face. Once the face was smooth, she doused it with an alkaline wash. This was followed by a slathering of thick, white paste, filling in any wrinkles, crevices, or lines on a person's face. Once everything was filled in, she covered her work with a quick powder. Add a hint of blush and voila, good as new. It had only cost you 20 guineas, or roughly £1,500 today. It was with the enamelling process that advertising was particularly successful for Madame Rachel. She wasn't the only shop in town offering the service, but her marketing materials clearly implied that her method was the best one. She used a combination of tactics to get her message across. First, she overpromised, alleging that her enamelling treatments would last much longer than her competitors, up to a year. Second, she used fear-mongering, implying that a woman's beauty could be forever tarnished if they left it in the wrong hands. Only Madame Rachel on Bond Street could handle this treatment correctly. It was an effective campaign, and Madame Rachel was soon renowned for her enameling work. Allegedly, wealthy women traveled all the way from America to receive her unique and skillful treatment. Her words and messaging were highly effective. When Rachel spoke, people listened. She became synonymous with beauty. And with her endearing personality, she was quick to make any customer loyal to her for life. Madame Rachel impressed her customers with her connections, telling them that she worked as a perfume supplier for the Queen, as well as Empress Eugenie, the wife of Emperor Napoleon III. She was highly regarded as one of the most beautiful women of the era. She regaled her clientele with stories about her friendships with famous actresses and royalty. Rachel also frequently lied about her age, claiming she was in her 60s instead of her 50s. This was a subtle tactic to demonstrate just how effective her products were. For an additional fee, Rachel started making house calls for certain clients. With the help of her eldest daughter, she created a 24-page pamphlet entitled Beautiful Forever. It provided an overview of her recommended regimen and tips on beauty. For those that followed her expert advice, the pamphlet promised eternal youth and beauty. Of course, every step of the treatment plan required one of her cosmetic products, and the pamphlet could only be purchased at Madame Rachel's shop. It was a bestseller. People were in awe of Madame Rachel. And as her reputation grew, so did her greed. Coming up, Madame Rachel moves from hustling beauty products to blackmail. Now back to the story. By 1864, 50-year-old Madame Rachel was running a small cosmetic empire. Thanks to a savvy marketing campaign, high-class women from all over the world flocked to her shop on Bond Street in London to receive the best beauty treatments money could buy. Of course, most of these treatments were no more effective than snake oil. But Madame Rachel knew how to play on Victorian women's immense desire to be beautiful and stay that way forever. Once she hooked a customer, she kept them coming back for treatment after treatment. Her busiest time of year was undoubtedly the London season. This lasted from February to August. It signaled the time of year when members of high society left their estates in the country and traveled to London, specifically Mayfair. The unspoken purpose of the London season was for young women to meet and marry young, wealthy bachelors. Because of the intense pressure young women were under to compete with one another and earn the affections of a potential suitor, the value placed on beauty was even higher. Madame Rachel was there to help the many young women look their best during the season. Of course, the use of her cosmetic services was as unspoken as the courtship. She quickly became a clandestine destination for any woman who took their future seriously if you weren't going to see Madam Rachel, it implied that you just weren't interested in competing with the elite. Money poured in. From 1862 to 1868, Madam Rachel was said to have been bringing in thousands of pounds a week. This afforded her enough money to purchase a box at Covent Garden, a carriage, and some horses. Most importantly to Rachel, it offered her an opportunity to provide an education to her children that she hadn't had in her youth. She spent top dollar to send her children to the best schools. Her only son, David, went to a highly regarded medical school in London. Hélène, one of her daughters, studied opera in England and Italy. The lives that her children led and the education they received was a far cry from the upbringing Madam Rachel had. And Rachel herself was enjoying a life unlike any she could have dreamed of in her youth. By now, she was more than just a shopkeeper in Mayfair. She was a part of Mayfair society. She met all the young women and their mothers who came to London each year for the season. Her successful cosmetics operation allowed her to live a life that was now quite similar to the lives of her clientele. The grandiose lifestyle she would boast about now became more of a reality, all thanks to her magical cosmetics. It's important to note that the women shopping at Madam Rachel's didn't have any money or property of their own. It all belonged to the husband, in accordance with the customs of the era. The women that came into her shop were, by and large, spending their husband's money, many without his knowledge or permission. And as we've established, the things they were buying came with high price tags. Ironically, women purchased these lotions and creams in an effort to remain attractive to their spouses, but at a huge cost to them. For some women, the cost of their Madam Rachel regimen became too much for their husbands to maintain. They were, effectively, cut off. This would have been incredibly distressing to them. Without Rachel's products, how could they maintain their beauty? Without their beauty, how could they maintain their worth? But Madam Rachel, ever the cunning entrepreneur, created a way around these obstacles. She offered her clients unlimited credit at her store. All she required was a small deposit as collateral. If a customer couldn't pay the entire sum for their French blossom cream and alabaster powder, Rachel opened a tab for them. While this seems common practice today, in an era of credit cards, operating on credit wasn't typical of business owners in the early 1860s. This reflected positively on Rachel, making her seem generous and only engendered more loyalty from her clientele. Rachel kept meticulous accounting notes of everything. Once a customer had racked up a hefty amount of debt in her ledger, Rachel asked the woman to make a payment if she wanted to keep her credit going. Madam Rachel knew full well that her request to be paid back in full wouldn't be possible. But that wasn't the point. Ever the understanding woman, Rachel gave these customers another option. They could pay as much as they were able to their outstanding balance, and in exchange for the rest, she asked them to provide an item of collateral. This was often in the form of expensive jewels or otherworldly possessions, things women could give away without their husbands noticing. Rachel told her customers that she would hold on to the item just until they were able to pay the rest of what they owed her. However, when her customers finally paid off their account, oftentimes the collateral items had disappeared. The jewels were long gone, a distant memory. She'd wear some of the jewelry she collected, but for the most part, Rachel pawned and sold the items, keeping the money for herself. She never had any intention of returning the collateral items to her customers. And the women she scammed had basically no recourse. They couldn't go to their husbands without admitting they'd continued to purchase items behind his back. They also risked the public shame of being exposed for purchasing cosmetics, which was still very much taboo. With her meticulous accounting notes, Madame Rachel had all the blackmail she needed to expose these women, making certain their reputations would never recover. But her shady tactics didn't stop there. In addition to blackmailing her customers, Madame Rachel sent falsified bills to clients for astronomical sums. She demanded payment immediately or an item of equal value. Again, women had little recourse. If they tried to fight Madame Rachel on the bill, they risked being publicly exposed and humiliated for using her services. And Rachel knew this. Instead, most women quietly accepted the false bill and paid up, not wanting to risk their social status. After a few years on Bond Street, Rachel expanded her business. She opened an Arabian baths next door to her beauty shop. In many ways, the baths functioned like a modern-day spa, designed to promote health and beauty benefits, fostered by the minerals and water from faraway lands. Much like her original shop, women were quick to crowd the Arabian baths. But bathing was only a small part of the operation. Madame Rachel also rented out steam rooms for even steamier purposes. Discreet rendezvous. In the ultra-conservative Victorian era, Madame Rachel offered women the same discretion to have their sexual desires met as she did to fulfill their vanity. Seeing another money-making opportunity, she allegedly cut out holes in the walls of the bathing rooms, allowing men to look in on naked women in the tubs. Again, as with everything with Madame Rachel, she charged for both the services she provided along with her silence. The baths also provided Rachel with another revenue stream. Anyone who scheduled a secret tryst or spent an afternoon gazing through the peephole unwittingly opened themselves up to be blackmailed. Remember, this was an ultra-conservative society. Women paid hush money to keep Rachel from revealing that they used her cosmetic services. They'd pay a fortune to stop her from revealing legitimate impropriety. Madame Rachel operated in this fashion for several years. Though there were whispers of her darker tactics, her blackmail for the most part happened under the radar. But in 1864, 50-year-old Madame Rachel flew too close to the sun. That year, she met 64-year-old Mary Tucker Borrowdale. Mary was visibly aged and frail-looking, a very different image than the usual clientele that frequented Madame Rachel's. She was a widow. Her husband was a colonel who had died in India, leaving Mary his military pension to live off of. After seeing one of Madame Rachel's advertisements in the Debrett Peerage, boasting her world-renowned fame for preserving and enhancing youth, beauty, grace, and loveliness, Mary saw an opportunity to cure the loneliness she felt after losing her husband. She made a journey to 47A New Bond Street in late 1864, desperately seeking a way to regain her long-lost beauty. With the death of her husband fresh in her mind and her own mortality staring her down, Mary was desperate to hold on to her youth. On her initial visit, she didn't purchase anything. She merely walked through the shop, taking it all in. But she would soon return. On subsequent visits, Madame Rachel was able to strike up a few conversations with Mary. In doing so, Rachel was able to get a sense of the widow. She heard the anguish in Mary's voice, the desperation with which she wanted to look young and beautiful. Madame Rachel came across as an engaged and compassionate listener. Mary felt understood. Madame Rachel promised to help Mary, but warned her that, given her current state, it would take quite a bit of work, and that meant her services would cost quite a bit of money. But Mary insisted she was up for the challenge, no matter the cost. Madame Rachel clarified, exactly how much money did Mary have to spend? For the next 2 years, Madame Rachel slowly bled the widow Mary dry, applying treatment after treatment, salves, balms, creams, lotions, and yet there was no noticeable effect. Not even the magnetic rock dew water of the Sahara could make any noticeable change on her old, lined face. By 1866, Mary was frustrated. She came to Rachel's shop one day full of disappointments. Perhaps they should end their business together. She was still alone, still ugly. Knowing that what Mary desired above all was companionship, Madame Rachel quickly dangled a new carrot in front of her mark. Even if Mary hadn't noticed the improvements to her beauty, others had. Then, Madame Rachel confided in the old woman. She had a secret admirer, a wealthy gentleman named Lord Ranelagh. Rachel admitted that she was waiting to introduce the pair until she felt like Mary was just a bit more beautiful, when she felt it was more likely that the mystery man might propose. But if Mary wanted to stop the treatments, Madame Rachel thought there was still a chance he'd offer marriage. Probably. Definitely maybe. Of course, Mary Tucker Borrowdale took the bait, hook, line, and sinker. The promise of her husband far outweighed the cost of one more beauty treatment. She opened her purse, paid up, and the games began. There was only one problem. Lord Ranelagh wasn't real. Thanks for listening to Con Artists. We'll be back next week with part two of Madame Rachel's story. We'll see how Madame Rachel continued the fictitious charade with Lord Ranelagh, conning Mary Tucker Borrowdale out of her entire life savings. Left with nothing, Mary will finally take action against Madame Rachel, leading to her downfall. You can find all episodes of Con Artists and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Con Artists, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Con Artists on Spotify, just open the app and type Con Artists in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. I'll see you next time. Con Artist was created by Max Cutler, is a production of Cutler Media, and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler. Sound designed by Anthony Valsic, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Paul Marler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Freddie Beckley. This episode of Con Artist was written by Robert Axelrod. I'm Alastair Murden.